Hello, and welcome to River Writers, a production of the Writers Guild of Astoria, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting writers and the literary arts in Astoria and the Lower Columbia region. Your co-host, Asher Finch, aired the second Monday of each month at 9 a.m., River Writers provides a chance to peek behind the curtain at the craft of writing. We talk about what motivates writers to do the work they do and ask writers what they've learned through their creative practice. Today with Brad Peitzik. Major Brad Peitzik served 15 years in the U.S. Army as a combat engineer and mathematician before being medically retired. He currently lives on the Oregon coast, tries to be the person he needed in his darkest moments. In his newest book, Dragon's Current, explores his life with schizoaffective disorder and what his new world meant after leaving the Army.
Got it.
Okay. Hi, Brad. Thanks for being with me here today.
Oh, thank you, Asher. It's a pleasure to talk with you today.
I am really thrilled to have the chance to interview you, not only because of this new memoir that you just came out with, but also our lives have been kind of intersecting for the last like 4 years.
That's right. All the way back to Dungeons and Dragons.
Which, speaking of dragons, that word is a key part of your memoir's title. Dragon's Current, The Storm That Stayed Inside. You want to talk a little bit about your book before I jump into some other questions?
Yeah, absolutely. So my book started as a therapy project. And I think a lot of memoirs might have that kind of genesis to them. But this was something that I was writing to help understand my own life through a lot of mental illness that popped up for me and ultimately destroyed my career. After I started writing it more and started workshopping it with other writers and taking community ed classes at Clatsop Community College, I realized that this is the exact book, not that I needed right now, but that I needed 10 years ago. With a lot of heavy prodding from my wife and from my writing mentor, Sean Davis, I decided to publish or work towards publishing. So lots of editing, lots of rewrites, lots of things that weren't nearly as therapeutic as your first couple drafts.
Yeah.
But the tedium, it's paid off because I have a book now, and it's exciting to me because when I was in high school, there was nothing I wanted more to be than a writer.
Really?
And yeah, that's true. And I went to school for engineering instead, which was, I don't know, it's a decision that got me to where I am today. So I won't say it's a bad decision, but I wanted to be an author and here I am now.
You know, this may be anecdotal, but down at Oregon State University, the Creative Writing Club is almost a majority engineering students more than it is like English majors and writing students. So I think that wish to be a writer and an author overlapping with the necessity almost of an engineering career is more common than you might think.
Well, I could see that a little bit because in a nutshell, to me, engineering is problem solving.
Yes.
And a lot of people that consider themselves problem solvers have a creative bug to them.
Yes.
So maybe that's why you see some of them, some of the people in the writing club down at, did you say Oregon State?
Yeah, down in Corvallis.
Maybe that's why you see a lot of them in there. Plus, there's a whole lot of engineering students down there.
That's most of what is down here, to be fair.
Right.
No, I've had a lot of interesting conversations with folks about that intersection between engineering and creativity and outlets. And
the good engineers are creative people.
I agree wholeheartedly. And I think engineering is inherently creative. I want to talk a little bit more about this drafting and writing process. And you said the first draft of your book was mostly a therapy project, and it was through revisions and rewrites and edits that it turned into something that could be published. And I want to know how, in your process of these rewrites and edits, you were able to balance that personal discovery with a public vulnerability.
That's public vulnerability is it's an interesting phrase you're using.
Yes, but I think that telling a
I've been doing a
story.
lot of that lately through Rogue Cell and also through this book. And I think it's important for people that are trying to understand their past, if they're doing it through any sort of outreach, they have to be vulnerable about it with themselves and with other people, if that
So
gets to your question.
I
Only
think it
sort
does a
of.
little bit. So your memoir specifically, it's about your partly like your time in the army, your time in a war, but more about your mental health and
Absolutely. There's two deployments in Iraq that that I've had in my life, and they're both covered in this book, but you only get one chapter for each.
yeah.
This is it's not a war book,
No.
but after about halfway through it is when my military career ended. So, and now you got me thinking. So, about halfway through the book is where my military career ended, and I started really, my unraveling started to really happen quickly at that point because I felt something that a lot of veterans feel when they get out is I lost sense of who I was. I didn't understand. I've always had a mission. I didn't have that stuff anymore. I
Yeah.
didn't have assigned buddies. It was
That transition back into civilian life was.
that transition, and I was doing it with well, I'm sure at some point we'll talk about the dragon, but I was doing it with the dragon at my side.
Let's talk about that dragon now, just
Let's talk about it.
A, for your and I's conversational sake, but B, so that listeners have a little more context to what is this dragon's purpose.
The dragon, it might sound like a metaphor, but for me, it's something that's very real. So the dragon is, we didn't cover it yet, but I have schizoaffective disorder. And that's kind of like a kid, but somewhere between bipolar and schizophrenia. I have one voice in particular that's in my head that's extremely critical and knows every chink in my armor. It knows how to hurt me, and it does it every chance that it can. And because of this Anthony Hopkins movie where they're doing an exorcism, and they're like the first part of exorcising a demon is knowing their name, I decided to name it, and the dragon just seemed like the perfect name for it because it captures its awful, vile, evil nature.
And
So
so the primary focus of the book is more about the dragon and your, from what I can gather, it seems that your primary audience you're trying to serve with this memoir is other veterans who might be in a similar situation. You yourself said that this is the book you needed 10 years ago. Do you find that there is any expansion of an audience in a community outside of that? I'm thinking primarily, I know your wife, April, is a big theme in this story, and you refer to her often as your anchor. Do you think that there's some empathy to be built, some understanding for those other anchors in veterans' lives through reading the story and understanding your written experience in a way that others might not be able to articulate?
So we're going to reel back a little bit.
Yeah.
And when we talk about veterans in here, I am a veteran and I also run a nonprofit that's focused on veterans. But this book, it might feature a veteran in it, but it isn't in no way targeted at veterans in
Ooh, veterans.
particular.
Okay.
Yeah, this book would be best read by somebody, anybody that either has a mental illness, cares about someone with a mental illness, or cares for someone with a mental illness, or wants to understand it or is sympathetic to it. In fact, the military speak, I did my best to make it not a prominent feature in here. You don't need a
To
military
cut the
background to
jargon.
understand what I'm talking about. But
Great.
because this this book was me trying to understand myself. Being a member of the military, it was only part of me.
And it is almost more for those anchors and for those community and for those trying to build empathy. And I think there's a really interesting balance between empathy with oneself for somebody who is dealing with mental illness, reading a mental illness-based memoir, and then also going outside of that and for those caretakers.
Absolutely.
Was that your
So
main focus in your revision process?
my revision process was trying to turn all of my freestanding chapters or freestanding sections into a cohesive whole, which I hope I did okay with. It was not as tough as what you think, because I did write this in what do you call it? A chronological order.
Yeah, it
So
is a
there's only a
linear
couple
story.
spots that I jump back and forth. And but I did try to capture the confusion that I had during the time. I mean, we talked about the dragon very briefly. The reality of my condition is that the delusional thoughts, sometimes I would be offended if you called my thoughts delusional, and other times I would call them that myself. It's just based off wherever I am on that day. It's
At
like,
that
oh,
point,
today it's aliens. All right, I'm gonna think about that.
from my understanding, it's not just think about it, but like experience almost.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I want to know a little more about your writing process itself.
Okay.
In the whole 4 years that I've known you, we've talked quite a bit about the fact that you're writing and in these different like online writing groups and critique groups
Yeah.
and how what does writing actually look like for you? Do you have a routine for that? How is it shaped around your life?
I don't have a routine for it. I have a very sporadic relationship with it, and a lot of if I can give a shout out to Peter Pan Market, a lot of what I wrote was actually me sitting at Peter Pan, sipping coffee and working on drafts. And
That's my favorite way to do it, is plant myself somewhere else to draft.
yeah, with headphones on and oblivious to anything going on around me. But my process is, it's very informal. When I got a bug to write, I write then, and most of my second draft, we'll call it, I don't know when one draft becomes a second or a third, but we'll call it a second draft. Most of it was written over the course of about a month,
Really?
but that was extremely productive, and that's not something that was sustainable for me. And after I did that, I don't think I touched it for maybe 5 months after that.
I was gonna ask if doing the
I burned
draft
out.
that quickly gave you that sense of burnout, and it sounds like you just answered that for me. Is that's a very rapid pace to move through this large
It
of a book.
was very rapid, and I mean, it was a second draft, so a lot of it was already there, but it
But I
was somewhere
think,
between editing, and some of it was a complete rewrite,
yeah,
and
I
then a
think
lot of it was
too
the red marker Xing through things that really didn't contribute to
belong.
the story.
I think too, there's an emotional toll that comes to memoir writing that
Oh, for
isn't
sure.
as significant in something like fiction pieces, even though fiction does typically draw on the life of an author, you're not explicit about it being the life of an author.
Yeah, I could see that. I actually, this isn't promotion, but I wrote another book too, a fiction book.
That was going to be a follow-up question. Is do
In
you see
high
yourself
school, I
doing more
did.
writing?
I will do more writing eventually, but this book I mentioned, trying to remember the name of it even. Perilous Destiny. It was a fantasy novel I wrote in high school. It's really bad.
As most
But,
high school written books are.
yeah, it exists only in dot matrix printer form right now.
Perfect. Do you want to go through and try and rewrite
No, I don't.
it?
It's not worth that, but
Yeah.
it's fun. My oldest son actually read it and he agrees it's bad.
I think him being your child alone is obligatory to have that opinion.
Yeah.
As a writer who is the child of a mother who, writer is a loose term, I may really love a piece of her work, but I will still call it bad to her face.
Yeah.
It's what your kids are, they gotta do.
Well, my kids are a little bit more kind than you were, I guess. They say nice things to me all the time.
I love that for you and your relationship with your children.
I have a great relationship with my kids. It's easy. They're great kids.
So, what do you find writing about your kids and about your family? What's your relationship with writing about them?
I wrote about April a lot. She's a big part of this story, and without a doubt, and I don't know how dark you get on your show, but without a doubt, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for my wife. And I do call her my anchor sometimes, but the best metaphor for her, and this is towards the end of the book, I specifically say this, I refer to her as my grounding rod, and
Someone to capture the storm.
someone to capture the storm, because I mean it's the very first chapter in the book was my encounter with, well, I think it was lightning in Iraq, so that's what the current part of the Dragon Current comes from. It's the electric,
Yeah.
and it's also the currents that pull us through life.
I love that. I love. I don't know. There's a fully rounded metaphor there, I think, about with the current of electricity, the currents of life. And I'm thinking, in Astoria, we have with the mouth of the Columbia River right here, and getting to see the currents there, but also current as in present.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that that is such a multifaceted metaphor to be able to interpret in so many ways that still feel relevant to the story.
That's interesting, because I've never really considered about the present tense nature of current.
Of current.
And I thought about it like with mostly electricity in
Yeah, but
this,
as an
but
engineer, that might come
as
back there.
now for the record, I was never finished an engineering program in college. I switched to architecture, and then the Army made me an engineer, so I'm a military engineer. That means I'm good at blowing stuff up. I'm good at building stuff very quickly with not a lot of resources. And but the design of things, yeah, my buildings are beautiful. I don't know if they stand or not. They're all in my head.
I love that. I've become such a nerd about architecture and architectural like eras in housing design
Oh
recently.
yeah. Well, the
That's a
story
huge
is a gold
digression.
mine for housing, with architecture.
Oh, it totally is. It's such a beautiful area. Do you find that Astoria and its, I don't know, its landscape, its scenery, its architecture influences your writing?
Absolutely. I think I might have said this on a Carol Newman show. I feel like Astoria is where the muses came to live, because
Yes.
this town is filled with artists, it's filled
Yes.
with authors, which is just another kind of artist. It's filled with all kinds of creative people,
Musicians,
musicians,
creatives, just as a
just
whole.
creatives, and there's a whole lot of people that make amazing stuff. And my neighbor, I'm looking at a house across the street right now, and that neighbor makes amazing art, and but she says it's all crafting and it's not art, and I'm raising the BS flag on that. But this town is amazing, and it's been a big part of the inspiration for me too, right? And the people that I've shared with have encouraged me so much. It made it so it took less courage than I would have maybe even been able to muster up for it.
Yeah.
And yeah, this town is We left Kansas in a truck that was pulling a camper, and our plan was to travel the United States for a year looking for our forever home because I didn't feel like I was going to be able to heal where I was. And we got to Astoria at about the 4 month mark, and the light bulb went off. It's like this is the town where I can heal and I can be the best me. And despite still, I mean, my mental illnesses will never go away, but despite having those, I have not been this mentally healthy in a decade, and I also haven't been happier. This is Astoria. If you can hear me right now, you're pretty awesome.
I know when I came to Astoria for the first time, I moved there in 2018 and pretty instantly knew that it was home. And even in the time I spend away, I always describe Astoria as magic and as home. That will forever be where my heart is.
What do they say? The magic of Astoria is real. I think there's a line like that in Shanghai.
I think so. And I think magic is truly the best way to describe it. So when you moved to Astoria, it was an unknown adventure.
Oh, for sure. I
And when
have
was that?
2019, right after you did, apparently.
Okay, so we've been here about the same amount of time. That's cool.
2019. In fact, the only thing I really knew about Astoria was from movies before we came here.
Huge film town.
So I knew it was in the Goonies. I knew it was in, well, I'm not going to name all the movies everybody knows,
Everybody
but
knows them.
that's like, I was a kid in the 80s, so
So you
I
saw
grew
all
up.
of them.
It's pretty fun to live here during everything's 40th anniversary and being like seeing a whole bunch of other Gen Xers walking around excited about stuff, and then their kids in tow being like, I don't even know if I've seen that movie. It's like,
Yes. I have to say, going to school in the Willamette Valley down in Corvallis, one time I was at the dog park and there was a kid at the skate park next door, and this kid might not have been older than 10. And I heard him scream at the top of his lungs, like, "Hey, you guys," in that Goonies. And I was like, "Okay, your mom is Gen X," and I could see the mom chuckling behind him. And it was so sweet.
it.
Yeah, I love how, you know, whether or not somebody knows it's Astoria, they know Astoria. So how you talked earlier about how Peter Pan kind of became your place to write, and Astoria became the place that gave you the courage to write. So place seems to have a pretty big influence in your writing and your life.
Place absolutely does. And in fact, every chapter in my book is divided by where I was living at the
By
time,
place.
by
Okay.
place. And
Yeah.
which there was some repetition that came in as the military moved me around and I started going to some of the same places again. So that made naming the chapters a little bit tougher. But the place is very important to it. And when I came to Astoria, I came here with of a fear that it would be the exact same, but I also carried a hope that it would be different. And that hope was, it's part of the equation of place that helped me get to where I am today.
Yeah. And it seems like that hope prevailed.
It does. It did, and I think it can for a lot of people. But I think that's a big message that if I were to give to your audience, It would be never stop looking at yourself. Always hold on to some hope with that at the same time. And don't be so hard on yourself. Just give yourself the same grace and understanding that you would expect someone else to give to you.
Love that.
Because we don't need, and I'm trying to be profound on the spot, but if there's anything that the dragon would be to me, it's the opposite of that. It was everything about me that was wrong brought to the forefront. And some of those things, and I use the word wrong on purpose, because when it comes to looking at yourself, right and wrong is just it's a matter of perspective. It's a matter of opinion. Those are just, I guess, it's a matter of you just need to be kind to yourselves, and
Yeah.
that's the big step.
Well, I
Yeah,
think that that's a great resonant tone.
that kind of went to the spiraled out of control there, but
Kind of liked it though.
you
I think
guys
that's a
are
good resonant note to kind of end on. I'm going to ask you.
you guys are you're along the journey with a somebody that hears things, see things, and has delusional thoughts and lots of paranoia. You can
Yeah.
expect a few
A few digressions and
digressions. That's right. And a little redirection. Oh,
well,
and my other
Brad,
message I'll share with everybody: if you
please
need meds, take your meds.
take your meds. If you can't make your own chemicals, store-bought is fine.
Yep, I 100%. But that
Yeah,
said, skills before pills. So
go to therapy at the same time.
that's right. They'll help you build the skills.
Yes. So, if folks were looking to read your memoir, how would they find you?
Well, the tough part is you got to be able to spell my last name. But it is on Amazon. It is on Barnes and Noble. What is that? BN.com.
You want to go
And
ahead and spell your name for us?
I will. My name is Brad Peitzik. That is Peitzyk. Or you can search the title of my book, but if you can spell my name, you will get to it very quickly. There's not a lot of us out there.
So, just wrapping up for everybody listening, I was here today with Brad Peitzik, the author of Dragon's Current, The Storm That Stayed Inside, a memoir about identity collapse and the long work of rebuilding. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you so much, Asher. It's been great talking with you today.
You too. Thank you for listening to River Writers. The Writers Guild of Astoria is a 501c3 nonprofit organization promoting literary arts and serving writers in the Lower Columbia region. You can find out more and become a member by visiting thewritersguild.org. Until next time, keep the words flowing and your pencil sharp. I'm Asher Finch for River Writers.